Oh, you brave soul. It's an entirely different kind of bravery that's going to be necessary for this week's episode of By Hearts. That's right. The internet is no longer available where Matt lives in Louisville. So just Brian and I getting together, and the internet not even available in Brian's home tonight. So let's pray that his bandwidth holds up. As you've got, what, the laptop run through the cell phone now as we record this?
Laptop run through the cell phone. The hamster is well fed and oiled up. I put some little bit of beer in there. So, yeah, we're just you know,
how do you
super
oil
gluing
up
everything
hamster?
Together. I think we're in good shape,
though. How do you oil up a hamster?
Sean, if you've never oiled up a hamster, you've really never lived, right?
Oh, my goodness. Some of the things people do when the internet's not available, that's... what I'm taking away from this is going to be scary. By Hearts, episode 4, Sean and Brian, as Matt sits home alone in the darkness. Now, Matt's had a really bad run of luck lately. He had the storm there last week that, like, knocked out a window in his townhouse and then got a whole bunch of his cardboard, his good cardboard, all wet. So he's going through an insurance claim on it. When they turned the power back on or something happened with an electrical spike. They lost, like, everything that wasn't his work computer that was plugged in. So his run of Matt Hurley luck just continues.
Yeah. That guy, he's got his hands in so many pies, and sometimes the pies just came out of the oven and just scald him hot. So, you know, it's bound to happen every now and then, but I find it ironic that the guy who works in dealing with multiple thousands of dollars electrical equipment is undone by an organic branch. You know, it's just like, it's like Green took over and just stomped his robot's deck or something. So hopefully he'll get back online for next week and we'll be good to go.
Yeah, hope so. Matt, if you're listening to this, which I know you are, once they fix the internet, we're actually feeling for you a little bit. We're not going to tell you that in person. We're going to continue to give you shit, but this is us actually feeling for you a bit.
Yes.
We will carry on with one tradition from Tryhards. What are you drinking tonight? Because I know you were just in Chicago and you bought a bunch of beer.
I bought so much beer, I don't even know where to start. It was even hard for me to be upstairs and be like, huh, I wonder what I'm going to drink tonight because I bought all this stuff. So I am drinking Three Floyds Dreadnought, which is a big IPA in a big bottle, and I'm planning on going through the big bottle during this episode of By Hards. But, man, I bought all kinds of stuff. I bought some stuff that I'd never even heard the brewery before. Some of the stuff I'm excited about is 21st Century Brewing Company makes something called Hell or High Watermelon, and it's a really, really good beer. So, Sean, I think between the Grapefruit Rattler that I told you about as kind of like the perfect disc golf beer,
mm-hmm,
and the Heller High Watermelon, I think I'm kind of leaning fruity here in July and August, so we're going to try that on the way up to Minneapolis as well, the Heller High Watermelon. I want to get your take on that because it really is good, but I'll make sure I keep one back for you. And if you have it really cold, I think the disc golf course is exactly where you want to drink that. But no, the Dreadnought, which comes in this absolutely huge great bottle, it's a double IPA, it's, I don't know, 8% or something, so I have no responsibility for what I say in a half an hour on this.
You've talked about Toppling Goliath on the show before, and do the Pseudo Sue and a number of other ones that are all great. I'd not have the Rover truck until this weekend, so I was able to save a couple of those back. So got the top pulled off, and they got the Rover truck here going on for this episode of By Hearts. You were pretty busy over the weekend. You were in Chicago. There was a bunch of magic going on. And if this is your first experience with By Hearts, this is the less aspirational sibling of Tryhards, unedited, free-flowing. It only happens once, maybe twice a year, and only when one of the Tryhards can't be here. And as we mentioned before, Matt unable to join us for the cast tonight. So none of the usual in the elevator and all those things that we usually do. It's just going to be Brian and I hanging out and talking magic this evening. Did you watch anything while you were so busy over the weekend? I know you said you got to watch a little bit of SCG on Sunday, and they were doing Modern in Atlanta. And the reason I ask, and we're going to talk about a couple other things as we go here, but convince me that Modern hasn't put viewership for magic into the same category that, say, soccer in this country was in 6-8 years ago. And that's the people like to play it, but they don't like to watch it. I'm starting to get there with Modern for some reason. I feel like even though there are decks, as many decks as the day is long, they really fit into a couple different archetypes. And it almost feels like it's getting, I don't want to say redundant, but predictable.
Well, I agree with you on that front. It's predictable that it's wide open. And here's the thing. People are creatures of habit. And when you, let's say, come to a sport that you don't have a whole lot of experience with, you kind of want those touchstone plays, those touchstone moments that you can connect with on a regular basis. So, for example, I'm not the world's largest football fan. Never, and this is American football, mind you, never played it. And so sometimes the people who, when I'm watching it with a group of people who know a lot about football, they'll start talking about things that the offensive line does, that the defensive line does, stunts and pulls. And I'm like, okay. And they're talking about a nickel defense and they're talking about the dime package. And I'm like, okay. And just kind of over my head, even this long as being a guy and exposed to sports, there's some of that I just have, you know, never really kind of intuited about what that is. And I think when people come to soccer for the first time, it's like offsides are confusing. You know, what's all this going on? Why is this a foul and that not a foul? You know, all that kind of stuff. Why, when you play it back to the goalkeeper, can he not pick it up? But, you know, every other time he can use his hands. Those are the things. This is a very long way around to talk about Modern. If I'm new to Magic and I want to watch a tournament and I'm like, oh, yeah, I saw this great matchup between Infect and Affinity, and the games were super short and super, you know, people are playing cards and the whole match lasted like 22 minutes. And now we have to suffer through Titan Shift versus Mono Green Tron. We have to suffer through Ironworks combo and Blue-White Control. This is not the same game. And so I feel for those people who are kind of like, what am I watching? And Sean, maybe you're going through some of that. Because I feel like Modern, unless you know all the decks and you can maybe kind of do the, you know, Cliff's Notes versions for your buddy or whatever, it does require an investment of knowledge to know. Now, we have that. We can, within the first three turns, A, we look at the title under the player, you know, on SCG Tour and see what they're playing. Or based if the sound's off for whatever reason or, you know, can't see that, we can see by what they're playing, oh, they're probably on this. That's just us being experienced Magic players. So, yeah, even as an experienced watcher, though, are you finding that? And is that, am I kind of hitting it? Is it just like you're not having the matches that you want to see, or you just feel like you've seen too many of those matches going forward?
I think it's just the matches that I'd want to see. It's something strange, like, I like playing these style of decks, so maybe this is what's coming out. But one of the rounds, it was like Ponza versus, and I guess they don't call it Ponza anymore, Green Red Land Destruction.
Which is such a worse name than Ponza. Give me a break.
It was taken on like Tron. And okay, that's a horrible matchup for Tron if you look at it on its face. But Tron had just a devastatingly relevant draw in both of the games that were played out that Tron won. So that was a bit of an upset. You got a deck that's not constantly beaten to death like you see Mardu Pyromancer. Is Mardu Pyromancer a great deck? It is. Is it nearly beaten to death on coverage a lot of times? Yes. You see Titan Shift where, my God, we're having to sit through KCI more and more and more.
Yeah.
I mean, this is getting even worse than when you had to sit through Lantern Control. So...
yes, agreed.
It's just kind of like, oh, I'm going to grind my teeth a little bit here. But it's also, I think, seeped down into the coverage teams. They know the decks. They know what they're supposed to see. And maybe I'm looking for a little bit of drama. Maybe I'm looking to be taught something. Maybe I'm looking to be surprised a little bit. Maybe I'm asking too much from the game of Magic, honestly.
You usually do. You usually ask too much of the game of Magic.
But I'm not excited to watch it as much as I used to be. Does that mean that we need a ban? We're going to talk about BNR announcement coming up, as well as what didn't get announced as far as bannings that we were surprised by. But I don't know, maybe, and I've talked about this a few weeks ago on Tryhards, maybe it's the environment that I get to play in at the LGS, where everybody seems to be, on modern nights, taking a more creative bent. Maybe I'm getting spoiled by that. Now, would I do that at a GP or an SCG, paying what you have to pay to get into those? Probably not. I'm going to bring something that I can compete with, and I understand that. But maybe I'm just getting spoiled because I'm thinking about Modern as a developmental, experimental tech outlet right now, as opposed to like you've been settling in. You've been playing a bunch of Tron. You've been playing a whole bunch of Mardu Pyromancer lately. And you've convinced me that the Pyromancer deck is a good deck. Maybe I'm just a victim of my own mindset and the way that I've been dealing with and experiencing Modern.
Yeah, I there's something to be said for that. And I mentioned this last week on the cast on Tryhards as well. My eyes were a bit opened and I was a little humbled because I brought Mardu Pyromancer, which is, you know, tier one deck, very powerful. But when you're playing against rogue decks, it's not tuned, right? All the tier one decks are built with the supposition that you're going to be playing other tier one decks. So I mentioned Ben, who I played the kind of the Esper tokens deck with, you know, Geist of St. Trav and Drogstall Captain and stuff at FNM a couple weeks ago. Awesome. Loved it. Loved playing against it. I remember that deck fondly. And my deck just, it didn't have the tools to beat that deck. And so when you think about Modern on camera and in a tournament environment, it's different than Modern that you might see at the shop. Because I'm I was convinced walking out of there, I'm like, shoot, I think I'm bringing like a blue-black mill deck next time. I'm going to just archive trap people out of this room. And it's going to be amazingly fun, and I'm, you know, going to piss people off, and it's going to be a ball and whatever. Or just, you know, whatever that, hey, maybe I'll try that Thopter Swords combo deck finally, because this is the perfect environment for this. Though that's kind of where Modern is sometimes, even with all the coverage and everything else that Modern's had. I love that your LGS, Sean, has kind of gone to the, hey, let's not make it such a competitive thing. We want to encourage deck building. We want to encourage creativity. And I think that's great because people need to be forced into doing that still within the Modern pool of cards, but not just gearing everything toward the tier one known quantities all the time. I think that's a trap we fall into watching a lot of coverage and being kind of at the forefront of, you know, talking about Magic and having to know what these decks are strengths and weaknesses are. There's still a lot of really powerful things you can do with the cards that aren't played as often.
I think you said something important there, and that's that the decks that are really highly tuned, Mardu Pyromancer, as you mentioned, are tuned, even though everybody says, well, if you're going to play Modern right, you need a sideboard that's 40 cards because it's so wide open. But the predictable nature of what you're likely to see on the other side of the table 9 rounds out of 10 is a known commodity. And when you truly go rogue, there are some advantages to it. And I'm not even saying rogue is in something somebody's never seen before, but something that's underrepresented. I believe her name was Cat Light. She was playing the Bant Spirits deck. That looked really good because a lot of the decks in the format aren't thinking about interacting with it on its particular access. Does it have creatures and play them to the board? Sure. So creature removal is still good, but it has ways to punish you for things that other decks don't. So it was just interesting watching that this weekend and kind of seeing where Modern is. Nationals were this weekend as well, so you got to see Standard and Draft. That was cool. The Leaving a Legacy guys, Pat and Jerry, put on their own Leaving a Legacy. I think it ended up being like a 3K at their local store. Mm-hmm. And they did a stream for it as well. And first of all, if you've never been involved on the technical side of setting something of that nature up and then doing it, it's a lot of work and it's a lot of, oh, man, I hope this goes right, and a whole lot of, like, fingers crossed that you have to do it. So congratulations to Pat and Jerry for, one, putting that on, and two, pulling it off as well as their crew did. It was really enjoyable to watch. But the other thing that gave them a leg up, other than the fact that it was Legacy, of course, was the fact that they had on a gentleman named Wilson Hunter, who is part of their crew. He's developed it, or is on the team that has developed something called Cardboard Live. Now, if you watch, and I took some time to come up to the big work PC here and watch that Leaving a Legacy stream because of this new technology. What you do, if you're the TO or whoever is doing the broadcast work, you can load up the deck list of the players that are on camera, and then their name has a clickable tab, and live, while you're watching and they're playing, you can expand their deck list and then roll over the highlighted cards. All the cards are highlighted, so you can see the links. So if you can't see something or you're like, oh, what does that card do? You can do this all live while the stream is still playing.
No way.
Yeah, it was super cool.
Oh, and they've got, that's awesome.
They said there's even more features that are planned for it. It's kind of in its beta right now. This is the next thing. This is that next tier in, I think, Magic coverage. And hopefully they can do a deal with Wizards or something like that can happen, because I found it really cool, and I thought it was the next piece of the puzzle. Now, it's not enabled for mobile yet. That's why I said I had to come up to the PC and check it out. But I played on there for, I don't know, like an hour, the length of one match, and just kind of clicked it off. I just thought it was the cool thing that I think that's going to get a lot of people hooked too, because now there's not that barrier of trying to, you know, maybe look at a card on another device while you're watching it, and you can sort of have some more buy-in and some more learning going on as people watch and can actually participate with a little bit more knowledge of what's being done.
That's so cool. I think that interactivity is what's missing in a lot of times, especially when the screen goes a little fuzzy, if your bandwidth kind of drops or whatever, not being able to see cards clearly or see what text it is, or, hey, why did he put that in? Why did he bring that in from the sideboard? And, you know, being able to like zoom in on that. I think that's absolutely awesome. Any player, I don't care what level you are, could always use a little bit of education during the stream. You know, it's great when the coverage team brings up the card, you know, to that they're kind of talking about, et cetera. But, you know, it takes away a little bit. You're kind of forced to watch it, whether you want to or not. Mm-hmm. I like you said, if it's interactive and you can click on it, you can expand it, having control over that. That is super cool. So, yeah, kudos to Wilson Hunter for getting that online. And I can't wait to go back and do that. Now, can you interact with it now afterward? Or was it just like in cast?
I don't know. First of all, I don't know if they have the matches up like on YouTube or on a site,
sure,
where you can go back and watch them, or if there's VOD through Twitch with whatever they were doing. I'm not sure about that, but I would think that would have to be live based on my understanding of how they were talking about the technology on the cast. Maybe,
yeah,
I'm wrong.
That, yeah, it makes total sense.
I think that's what I'm thinking about. Yeah. So
sure.
Very cool. Check it out. Hopefully awesome. That technology starts to become omnipresent. I'm sure the guys who had developed it would love for it to become omnipresent too, because get paid. You know, you're making quite the contribution, and I think it's going to be something cool for the Magic community. Did you see anything else over the weekend that really got you going?
The one thing that got me going, and you know, just kind of I just want to give a shout out to Ryan Steiner at the SCG Modern, Sean, who ran a basic planes in his Mardu Pyromancer deck. 29th place.
Oh, man. Now, is this the next controversy? Because you were talking about this the other night. One of the guys at the shop, Joe, who played Mardu Pyromancer at FNM, he was talking about the play slot availability of the basic planes as well. Is this the dividing line for Mardu Pyromancer players?
You know what? I think if you're on the 3 Blood Moon package, I think it just makes sense to run a planes, because then you're just opened up to so many more sideboard cards. So, yeah, I think I'm kind of convincing myself that this is the way to go. We'll see. We'll see. Next time I go to a big tourney and trot this out, you know, if I get smoked because I had a basic planes in play and didn't have double black or double red for whatever reason, I'll be sure to let everybody know that it was my mistake. And that I was so high on the planes. So, yeah. But, no, I think that the deck's great, whether or not it's got a basic planes in there. But I think it just opens up more opportunity. So I was just happy to see somebody who actually placed in the money at SCG make that call. So, hey, Ryan Steiner, join Tryhards. You and I will, yeah, Skype and stuff.
A shout out to the worst basic land in Modern, planes. makes the top 32 this
That's
week.
That's right.
All right. I, you know what? I guess the power level is falling a little bit if we're shouting out basic planes in modern right now.
Well, is it a guru planes, though? If it's guru, it's like tap or three mana or something.
Absolutely. So, yeah. I don't know. I didn't see it. I expect a full report on which edition of planes it was from you.
I will check. I will check the coverage and let you know.
There are some other cards that I thought we weren't going to be seeing in Modern anymore, but it turns out we're going to keep seeing everything that we've been seeing. The Banned and Restricted announcement was earlier today. I was shocked. I'm not going to say appalled. I was actually happy, but I was shocked, one, that they touched Legacy, and two, that they went for something as, I don't know if I want to say beloved or reviled, something that inspired such strong emotion as Deathrite Shaman. Deathrite Shaman and Gitaxian Probe, both banned in Legacy. No changes in any other format. I was not surprised that Standard didn't see a change. I was surprised that Legacy saw a change, and I really thought Modern. I texted you guys, you and Matt, who's not here tonight, that I thought Ancient Stirrings was going to go in Modern. The decks have become so dense with options for Stirrings and the decks that play them. The card has gotten so good. And we've talked about this before. You know, Ponder is banned in Modern for being enabling too consistent of a draw, too consistent of a smoothing. Yet Stirrings is still there doing the same things for the deck that's in.
Probably at a better rate, you know, when you think about it.
And sure, there is the constriction that you have to play colorless cards in your deck in order to, but the decks that do leverage it to such a high effect. And you still have map, you still have things like, you're the Tron player. You've still got map, you've still got Sylvan Scrying. If you're going to go that way.
Yeah, if you're going to go that way, you still got Sylvan Scrying, exactly. I mean, there's so many cards. If you're in like anything green, and then colorless, you have so many different ways. And this is why the KCI decks have jumped, right? Because of Sylvan Scrying, because of Ancient Stirrings, and then all the Chromatic Stars, Chromatic Spheres, everything that'll give you a mana.
And Stirrings doesn't even kneecap the deck. It's like giving it a paper cut.
Yeah. And so I was surprised as well, because Stirrings is just a silly magic card. If you look at it, to be able to filter through five and put one into your hand, in some ways it's more powerful than Ponder. It's not what green does. You know, Sylvan Library, which is still a Legacy all-star in, you know, bug decks and things of that nature with Leovold, you have to pay four life to draw an additional card. Yeah, it lets you filter, but you're filtering and then, you know, setting up your draws and things. But to draw that extra card is four. You get to look at five for a green and put one into your hand. Really? That's better? That's not banworthy, but Ponder is, you know? It's a little boggling to me. But maybe they're saying that because it's colorless, you have to find a colorless card. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the rationale is necessarily, because it wasn't even mentioned in Ian Duke's article today. He didn't even mention Ancient Stirrings as a possibility.
And they never give you explanations of cards they didn't ban.
Okay, well, correct. But they did. But, you know, on the same token, they did go out of their way to kind of give a long update on Standard without banning anything. So I thought that was interesting. It was kind of like, we had the whole big thing on the two cards in Legacy. We had the big, here's why we didn't do anything in Standard. And then Modern wasn't even mentioned. So you tell me.
Well, I think Standard
is... nice to have an update in Modern.
Right. Standard is what keeps the lights on for him. So, of course, we're always going to get a lot of input on Standard. And I thought he did a nice job of breaking down the numbers and everything, too. They also know that Standard's rotation is like, you know, essentially tomorrow, in terms of magic play.
Yes. So yeah, and they're not wrong about that. That's exactly right. And this is why they changed it, so they wouldn't have to keep backpedaling and be like, oh God, we're going to be living through another Goblin Chain Whirler winter, so to speak. You know, so they know that this is coming. They know that with rotation things are going to change, etc. Were you surprised that Chain Whirler wasn't out, Sean?
No, not at all. Not with the flack that they've taken for the bands in Standard. I mean, you look at the band list for Standard, it's still a substantial number of cards, and it feels so bad when you're a player and you open the new pack, you get your rare out, and you can't play it.
Correct. And it was funny at the shop this weekend, as I was, there was a gentleman who was really eager for some Dominaria stuff, which I happened to have with me, and was looking for kind of like making a white deck with Banalish Marshall and things of that nature. And I was like, yeah, sure, here. And I was looking through his list, and I was like, oh, Aetherworks Marvel. And he's like, what's that card do? And I'm like, oh, this was actually an all-star for a while until it got banned. He's like, oh, you can't even play that card? And I said, not in Standard, you can't. I said, but I'll, you know, throw it into the trade pile, because I said it's a powerful card and, you know, it's good to have that. He's like, he's looking at it and he's like, huh, that seems really broken. I said, well, yeah, in the right metagame, it can be really terrible. And, you know, really terrible or really broken, depending. But it was just funny. Like, he was just kind of looking at it. He's like, yeah, I just threw that in there because, you know, it was a mythic rare. And I'm like, yeah, well, I'll take it. I'll take it toward your Banalish Marshall and some other things. But, yeah, how soon we forget some of those cards. But you're absolutely spot on. When you look at the list of Standard cards that you can't play with right now, there are really powerful cards. And I'm thinking, God, I'd love to play with that a little bit more. I'd love to play with, you know, a couple of these. I think maybe it would work right now in the metagame with the new Dominaria cards with, you know, Ixalan and stuff. But, you know, we're never going to get that chance. So, yeah, I'm glad Wizards didn't make the change either. I really am. I don't think Chain Whirler is that broken. It's affected the game just because the red decks are strong. But, you know, you look at 5-6 other archetypes and they could be just as strong too. We just got to get busier perfecting those decks, guys. Making sure that they're up to the challenge of the big red beast.
Well, and Rogue Refiner is still too good anyway, so he's not coming off the
list anytime soon.
What I think is funny is the fact that WotC was so scared of the potential of printing one mana accelerants again, i.e. Llanowar Elf, that they put Chain Whirler in there as a check, and now we're talking about banning the card that they printed to make sure that, like, Llanowar Elves doesn't go off the rails.
Yeah, exactly. So you can't really have it both ways. It almost makes, what did somebody say this weekend? They're so, Chain Whirler has had such an effect on the metagame that they've put their Llanowar Elves in the sideboard for their green decks, just because they don't want it to be a dead card. And I'm thinking, that seems a little bit of reactionary to me. I still think if you've got a turn one Llanowar Elf and you can tap it twice and get some value out of it before you possibly can see a turn three Chain Whirler on the other side of the board, you're still getting value out of it. That's just the game of Magic. You know, hey, what's my percentages on, you know, casting this? You're not going to expect your Llanowar Elf to stick around for 8 turns, 9 turns. I don't think anybody who's ever played that card has thought that. So, yeah, it becomes this very microcosm. People get so focused on the interactions between this card and that card, you know, versus, well, what's it doing overall? So, yeah, it is what it is. Chain Whirler is a good card. There's no question about that, having played with it and against it. But it's definitely not unbeatable. Definitely not unbeatable.
So that's about stuff that wasn't on the banned restricted list for today. Let's get to the ones that were. Gitaxian Probe and Deathrite Shaman. I know one of these is going to be a long and involved conversation, so let's start with Gitaxian Probe. I'm not surprised to see it go. I'm still thinking that one of these days Wizards is going to just ban all Phyrexian mana cards in Modern. You don't have to do that in Legacy. You've got Days and Force of Will and other things to keep them in check, and the burn decks are so good that if you just go crazy with paying Phyrexian mana, you're going to walk yourself right into your own loss. In Modern, I can see them getting there eventually. But in Legacy, Git Probe, is it because it essentially allowed you to play 56 card decks and start at 12 life? Was the game just fundamentally that different? Because the value of knowing what your opponent has in their hand is usually minuscule once you have any idea what's going on in the format. I mean, people weren't playing, you know, Glasses of Ursa which gives you that chance to look at your opponent's hand.
Right.
You know, it was, and you could cantrip. I mean, the card replaced itself. Let's be honest about that, too. You're paying 2 life to cantrip and get some incidental information. I can understand why it was banned. I just don't think it was, like, a huge offender in the format.
Yeah, it's interesting. When I saw the announcement and it said Deathrite Shaman and
Gitaxian Pro.
Thank you. Sorry.
Well, see, that's how minimal of an impact it has. Some people might have just thought there was only one card ban today. Just stopped reading after Deathrite Shaman.
I saw Gitaxian Pro and I was like, huh. But what people have said for a very long time is that Gitaxian Probe is more powerful than you think it is. It's like you said, it gives you two huge advantages. A, you get to see your opponent's hand, and it replaces itself for no mana, because then you can keep your untapped mana to make a play. And I think that's the biggest offender, as Wizards has come to know. The Phyrexian mana just opens up so many different lines of play, because if you have one blue source open, you're going to pay the Phyrexian mana. And then you could possibly, now I'm safe to cast something that needs a blue, or brainstorm, or ponder without the idea of getting dazed or something. It's just that's what it gives you. And so I get it. I think that with banning Gitaxian Probe didn't have to happen at the same time as Deathrite Shaman, but in the highest offending deck, I think it makes sense. Taking Deathrite Shaman out of Grixis Delver doesn't make Grixis Delver kind of a neutered deck. To me, taking 8 cards away from Grixis Delver basically neuters that deck. I'm not saying that all the other cards aren't powerful, but that deck was so synergistic that, you know, with a young Pyromancer in play, being able to probe your opponent, get a token, draw another card, maybe play another spell, get another token, and just, you know, that just kind of rinse and repeat. And this is why Grixis Delver was such a nightmare to play against and such a strong choice for so many tournaments, and why it's done so well. So to take those 8 cards out, Sean, do you think Grixis Delver has a future going forward? Is somebody going to come up with other cards to replace those slots, or is it just kind of dead as an archetype right now?
Well, it's interesting to me, because I thought Grixis Delver was dead with just Deathrite being banned. Because Deathrite is the entirety of what holds that deck together. It fixes your mana. It accelerates you. It gives you both defense and a win condition. It does so many. In fact, let's just do this right now. Of all of the offensive capabilities of Deathrite Shaman, which one to you was the most offensive? I mean, to me, it was the temerity of giving it that second point of toughness.
Oh, absolutely. Being a 1/2, we would not be having this conversation, because that card would not be banned. Deathrite Shaman would not have the effect that it had on the Legacy metagame that it had. But as a 1/2, we always jokingly call it the best one mana planeswalker of all time. Mm-hmm. That's basically what it became, because, you know, you drop that on turn one as a 1/2, and it just brick walls, you know, young Pyromancer tokens, it brick walls all kinds of things. And you're just thinking, geez, this is unbelievable. I mean, it can trade with so many things, and you just can't kill it nearly as efficiently as you can. So no, that definitely, the fact that it has 3 modes on it, I think is the second largest. If it only had 2 modes and still was a 1/2, I think I could still buy it. I'm still trying to debate in my mind which is the most, you know, what's the second egregious error on that card. Is it the fact that it can the black mana activation to deal 2 or to drain 2 life? Or is it the fact that you can gain life? Or is it just basically fixing your mana?
I was going to say the cost of fixing your mana for the rest of the game for the low cost of a black on your first turn, like that's it, the fact that it looks at both graveyards. I mean, there's just a number of things that are amazing about that card. And I understand, you know, why it rose to such heights of power and popularity. But I think not having that available in the Legacy metagame now is going to have subtle but important ripples because you don't have a one mana card that has no opportunity cost of including it in your deck. There was never a match of Magic that was played with Deathrite Shaman in which Deathrite Shaman didn't give you anything.
Because oh, God, absolutely.
It does so many things. Absolutely. You always got paid. There was no cost to including that card in your deck. There's no opportunity cost there because everything it did was always relevant.
Even to the point of you play a Deathrite Shaman and your opponent plays a land and like Fatal Pushes it or Lightning Bolts it. Great. Got a card out of their hand because they know it's a must answer. And you just feel ahead. Mm-hmm. They answer that with a card of their own. And you're like, fine, I've got three more I can find. And I've got other things I'm doing. And yeah, that's how that just, because every time it hits the board, you're thinking, okay, how am I going to get rid of this? It's never a card that you're like, nah, I'll let that stick around for a while and deal with it when I need to. No, because by that time it's already drained you for six or gained them six or let them cast, you know, ramp into something. Yeah, it was pretty broken to say the least. I'm just kind of curious as like, why now? I was thinking of, you know, when the good guy in the movie, you know, just finally finds out that their best friend has betrayed them. It's kind of like, Watsy, why now? Why this? You know, it's that's how it felt, because there's been such an uproar for God. Deathrite Shaman's been around for how long now? When did Return to Ravnica come out? 2013, 14?
2000 and a while ago.
2000 and I had more hair. And so I'm wondering why now? What's in? Hey, maybe Ian Duke just answered it in the article. Hey, we've been watching it and this is the time we decided. Okay, great. I'll take you at your word, and it'll be exciting going forward to see what people come up with.
Well, and going forward is a great word, because we're going to see team events coming up at Pro Tour 25, and Legacy is going to be one of those spots.
Yeah.
Do you think Wizards was worried that at a team event for something of that magnitude, pros like to play the best deck, unless they're going to make a metagame call? It could have been just 200 Grixis Delver decks in the Legacy spot at the top tables all weekend.
And you know what? Why not? Because if I was going to a team event, and someone would have to convince me not to play Grixis Delver, to be honest with you, going into an event of that size and magnitude, if you're picking another deck, you're expecting to see very specific archetypes. You know, you're hoping to spike against something else. And in a team event with people of that level of playing power, I don't see how you couldn't play Grixis Delver or something that you've been playing like Zach up in the Northeast is playing, like the Mono Red Prison deck. You know, something he's been on forever. Mm-hmm. Those are the kinds of decks that don't really care that much about Deathrite Shaman. That's fine. But for the majority of Legacy players, it's got to be Grixis Delver or the four color, you know, Leovold decks. Those are the decks that it wants it. So yeah, I'll be very curious to see what people start brewing with and what we start to see trickle out, what people are going to go to. I'm guessing lands is going to start making, you know, more of a comeback and whatever, I don't know, archetype you want to say, if it's going to be the slow lands deck or the turbo depths or whatever. That's going to be something. What are some other decks that could kind of crop up and be a deck that you'd want to play, Sean? Something that gets, you know, big fatties into the graveyard, perhaps?
Well, I was going to say any strategy that wants to play through the graveyard just had one of the key pressure points in the format taken off of its neck. So whether it's Dredge, whether it's lands, whether it's Reanimator, and I think you're going to see some changes on the Reanimator side. One of the reasons that Black-Red Reanimator got so popular, yes, it's the most explosive deck, but it's also swingy. But by being explosive, it's turn one on the play, or if it was on the play and didn't have what it wanted, it could take another look and still explode through before Deathrite lost its summoning sickness. So now you don't have to have that speed right out of the gate necessarily, because there's no turn one Deathrite left anymore. So whether or not Black Red slows down a little bit, whether it just wants a higher density of the things it does best without having to try and do it just on turn one all the time. Is that still one of the upsides of picking the deck? Absolutely it is. but are you going to be able to play some other things? Is what I call classical Reanimator, the blue-black that I've always been an advocate of. Is there room for it to come back? I think so, just because there's no one card that has all the features on it that Deathrite does. Are people still going to play hate? Are people probably going to play more hate for the graveyard in their sideboard now because Deathrite's not around? Yeah, but that game one is still so important. And just because there's hate doesn't obviate a strategy that wants to play through a certain zone. So if you want to play through the graveyard, you can still do it.
Oh, absolutely. And you could, you know, you could be like, oh, well, my game two still gets really good against Reanimator because of the hate I bring in. Okay, great. Guess what? You still have to draw those cards, and you still have to pick the right thing, and you still have to slog through, you know, their counter spells and their ponders and their brainstorms and everything else. It's just not like a free win just because you pack a little bit of graveyard hate. Just like if you pack hate against whatever archetype, you can pack hate against whatever. You still have to draw it. It still has to, you know, you still have to set yourself up to win against the deck, and you still have to not be so worried about what your opponent's doing. You still have to pay attention to, is my deck doing what it's supposed to do, or am I just playing not to lose to this certain archetype? I think that's what a trap people fall into a lot of times, is they're like, oh God, how am I going to beat this turn one Grizzlebrand? And you're thinking, dude, okay, he's got a turn one Grizzlebrand. You know, maybe I got two or three turns. That's it. We'll see where it goes. I still got to see what my deck can do. So it's interesting. I love when people get really panicky about certain things, because I think that's kind of fun, because they overestimate what one card can do. But in reality, that's kind of what Deathrite Shaman did to the format. Was it kind of did warp things to the point where black blue Reanimator just wasn't as good with Deathrite in the format. And now I think you're right, Sean. It's going to see a little bit of a comeback. So I'll be curious to see you play that over Pox at the next Legacy tournament we go to, because I want to see how the metagame shifts in response to the band announcement today.
Well, when we go up to Minneapolis for the GP, that's going to be after this weekend. So the BNR effect is this coming weekend. So I'm looking forward to, you know, after I scrub out of the main event, playing some Legacy sides and just kind of seeing what that metagame starts to look like. You're right. It'll be interesting because of those two one mana and a zero mana card, really.
That's really
that have been taken out of the format with the banned and restricted list. Deathrite Shaman and Gitaxian Probe, both banned in Legacy. What are you looking to replace your Deathrites with? I mean, in the decks that you play that play them, is there a card that you're thinking about? Because now, we mentioned it, it used to be in Legacy, the toolbox decks ran Green Sun Zenith, and you could get all of these green creatures that were different toolboxes. In my mind, the Grixis Delver deck was really the toolbox deck of the format, just because it was able to do so many different things and attack on so many different angles, and it didn't even need Green Sun Zenith in order to do it. Do you think we go back to now maybe Green Sun Zenith style decks? Are they going to fill that same role that the Grixis Delver deck played before? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. It's a good question. One card I was thinking about after I read the announcement, and something that this is a card that we've played in decks together, especially Louisville GP Legacy. Now a year and a half ago. Limduel's Vault. It's a 2-drop. It's black blue, but that card that offers kind of filtering, go get what you want. I feel like that's the kind of card that I feel like can maybe take the place of, well, not take the place of, but maybe you look to that angle as opposed to something that's just going to give you consistency and constancy. It's, hey, I'm going to dig for what I need and what I want right now. So that in Legacy is a very, very powerful tool. A resolved Limduel's Vault can be very, very powerful on a stalled board state, or to get you ahead and can kind of slam the door on your opponent. I still like that card. I'm curious to see if maybe the Bug Leovold list might just want to go a little bit more on the black and blue and go that way with maybe a little bit more hand disruption and a little bit less on the green. But we'll see. It'll be fun to see, because you just mentioned it, Sean. It just kind of cropped up. I'm like, oh crap, what Legacy deck am I taking to Minneapolis? Cause yeah, I want to play some side events as well. And at this stage, I've been just kind of playing whatever you know, floats my boat for a while. I haven't been focusing on something. So I'm kind of sitting there going, well, there's no way I'm putting Grixis Delver together, and I wouldn't want to anyway. And Blue-Red Delver is kind of out as well because it used Gitaxian Probe for sure, and that was one of the key cards in that deck. So, I'll have to get some feedback from our faithful listeners and some others in the community and see what I need to put together for Minneapolis and get a couple of reps in before we go up there.
It sounds like there's a new poll coming to patreon.com/tryhard.
Do it.
What deck should Brian be playing in Legacy? Now the Deathrite Shaman's banned and Gitprobe are banned. Yeah, that was interesting to wake up and see that this morning. You got anything that you're looking forward to coming up this weekend? I mean, we're starting to get on that stretch run leading up to GP Minneapolis now. It's going to be pre-release this weekend, so you going to get to go?
Yeah, I'm definitely going to go. We've got some plans to – the wife's birthday is early next week, and so we're thinking about going out of town. I still got to talk to her. Haven't had a chance to finalize plans yet, but no, I'm definitely going to get to a pre-release event. Still wondering how much of the product of M19 I want to order. I'll get something, I'm sure, probably a box, but – Some of the standard players at the shop have not been real happy with some of the events not firing, and so I think the current shop owner either A, needs to know that standard is going to be supported in the community, otherwise he's just going to keep offering those things that do fire. But you know, if nothing else, I got to get my draft on, I got to get my sealed on, Sean. We got to get some reps in before we head up to Minneapolis and start to crush day one, right?
I guess that means I'm supposed to take this pre-release like seriously, in air quotes, so I can't just play yes. like five color control like I try to play it like every
well you try to play
event.
Five color control, so maybe step out of that comfort zone a little bit and play four color control.
Mono green,
it's a
mono
challenge
green. I'm just gonna be just turning all my stuff sideways and getting in there the whole time.
I'm definitely looking forward to pre-release. I think it's still maybe one of the best nights of Magic you can have to anybody who's never done one before. Mm-hmm. It's just the anticipation of just opening cool stuff. There's always a good vibe. There's always good matches, it seems like. And even if you kind of scrub out, hey, that just means you get to go home and go to bed a little earlier than the others. So, I'm definitely looking forward to pre-release this weekend and cannot believe how quickly Minneapolis is approaching and cannot wait for that weekend.
RTFC. You always get a few of those good ones at a pre-release too. People are like, I could have done. Oh yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So, so I had you dead to rights and I scoot. Oh, okay. Well, good game, bro.
I've done that before. So really, really read the cards when you're playing at a pre-release, please. Even if they're cards that you think, you know, from Magic past, you can go ahead and reread Omniscience again, one more time before you scoop them up. All right, if we were Omniscient, we'd have planned this for a night when Hurley hadn't broken everything electric at his townhouse. We hope he's doing fine, and we hope you'll join us again coming up next week when we get the tryhards back together. We hope you have enjoyed the lazy, less successful, less aspirational version by hards. It happens once, maybe twice a year. We just get to kick back, let our hair down, and have some fun talking about the game we love. We'll see you next week. Thanks for joining us on episode 4 of Byhards.